We're doing sugyas in Maseches Sukkah. I think last week we didn't have a shir, but 2 weeks ago I think we did chinuch. I want to do a different sugya that's much broader than Maseches Sukkah. In general, I'm going to try to do that because we're nowhere near around Sukkah's time. There is a sugya that comes up in the context of schach, but it's really a much broader sugya than schach, and that is the concept of bittul barov. So I want to discuss a little bit about Bittul Barov. First, we'll see how it comes up in this Masechta, in Maseches Sukkah. So the first source number one in the Mar Mekomos, the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Tesam in the days, Amar Rava. So the Gemara tells us, it's going on a Mishnah. The Mishnah said that if you make a Sukkah under a tree, it's as if you made the Sukkah B'socha Bayis. And then it spoke about Sukkah Al-Gabi Sukkah, but it's going on the first Halacha, that you can't build Sukkahs under a tree, which is obviously a very common issue for those of us who live here in suburbia, where we have trees in our backyard. So sukkah under a tree is a significant issue. It's only a problem if the tree has more shade than it has sunlight. But if the tree has more sunlight than it has shade, meaning the tree doesn't really shade that much, it doesn't provide that much shade, then the sukkah is going to be kosher even if it's under a tree. Mimai, how do I know this? Midiktani ki'ilu asa b'soch habayis. It's the fact that the Gemara goes out of its way to say that when you build a sukkah under a tree, it's like you made it in the house. Why do you have to say it's like you made it in the house? Why do we have to be so verbose and so demonstrative with our lashon and so clear with the law? Just say lisni psula. Just say that it's possible. Why do you have to say it's as if you built it in the house? Why do we have to elaborate so much? Elaha kamashmalin. What it's teaching me is as follows. The ilan dumya debayis, that building a sukkah under a tree is problematic in the same sense that building a sukkah in a house is problematic. Ma bayis tilsum rum mechamal. So just like in a house, you have more tzel than you have shade, than you have sunlight. Av ilan tilsum rum mechamal. So to a tree, the kind of tree that's problematic is the kind of tree that resembles a house in that it provides more shade than sunlight. So asks the Gemara, wait a second. You mean to tell me that if I build a sukkah under a tree, and there's just a few branches that stick out, it's mostly sunlight, not so much shade, that's going to be a problem, that's going to be okay? That's going to be kosher? Why does it help that there's more sunlight than shade provided by the tree? You're still combining schach pasul together with schach kosher. And isn't that problematic? Meaning you're still using schach pasul. You're still using the branches of that tree. So shouldn't that itself be a problem, that you're using the branches of the tree as part of your sukkah? I don't care that it's only a small part of your sukkah. You're using it as part of your sukkah. So I'm Rav Papa Bishachavtan. So Rav Papa says, no, the case over here is Bishachavtan. What does that mean? So Rashi translates Bishachavtan. Rashi's in source number 2, I think I put it. Bishachavtan. Hishpil anafav. Yeah, do I have that Rashi?
Yes.
Yeah. Hishpil anafav, the last Rashi in source number 2. Hishpil anafav lamata. You lower the branches of the tree down. Mu'uravin im schach kasher. To mix together with the schach kasher. It's not where you have a sukkah under a tree, where you see the tree branches clearly hovering above the sukkah, and the schach kasher right by the top of the sukkah, but they're totally separate from each other. No, you lowered the branches onto the top of the sukkah, so that the schach kasher and the branches that are still attached to the tree are all interwoven, they're all mixed together. That they're ein nirin be'en, you can't see them as an independent entity. U'schach kasher rabba alav u'mevatla. So since the majority of the covering of your sukkah is made from schach kasher, it's mevatel the schach pasul. That's the din of bittul. D'midaraisa kol mili batel beruba, because the halacha is on a daraisa level, everything is batel berov, kiditan masisin mayisikuch merubman ksheira, just like the Mishnah says on Daf Yod Aleph, that if you have more schach, then you have the schach pasul, so then it's going to be kasher. So as long as you have more schach kasher than schach pasul, and the schach pasul is not above the sukkah, it's not on a different level than the sukkah, then it's going to be batel, then everything is going to be kasher. So the Gemara utilizes the concept of bittul barov in the context of schach pasul. Now it's a very unusual utilization of bittul barov. Where do we normally have bittul? When we talk about being mevatel something, so what do you say?
Cooking,
right. You take something non-kosher, it falls into your pot of kosher food. So good. So then we have a shaila of bittul. What does it mean that you're being mevatel? There's something that's bad. There's something that's not kosher. Something that you're not allowed to eat. So you need to be mevatel it. Schach pasul, you're not allowed to use that sukkah. but meaning for the mitzvah of sukkah, it's not a kashra chafza shel mitzvah, but it's not an iser. There's no iser called schaf basel. It's a tree. It's a wonderful tree. Nothing wrong with the tree. Yet we're being mevatel an object that's just an object. It's just a tree in order to create a kashra chafza shel mitzvah. So it is a little bit of a different kind of application of the concept of bittul, but Rishonim and Achronim have problems with this anyway, with the usage of bittul for other reasons as well. For example, what do we say over here? Bisha chavtan. So what does it mean? Rashi says hishpil anaf of lamata. You lowered the branches underneath. Now, rule number one of bittul is that bittul works when bittul happens. Bittul does not work as a lechachila matter. Ein mevatlin isa lechachila, where you're not allowed to create a sense of bittul. It's few and far between the cases where you're going to be allowed to be mevatel on purpose, where you're going to be allowed to take an iser and actually try to be mevatel. The rule is ein mevatlin isa lechachila. I just had such a case. Someone called me up at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, and he said that he got a phone call from a friend of his who's a baker in Eretz Yisrael. The guy is baking challahs for Shabbos, and any Jewish bakery is running through the night on Thursday night baking challahs. So he's a baker in Eretz Yisrael, and he was mafresh challah from the dough, and he accidentally, the thing that he was mafresh for the challah got mixed back in with the rest of the dough. And now he's freaking out, he doesn't know what to do. It's 1 o'clock in the morning in Israel, he can't call a rabbi there because it's 1 o'clock in the morning. So he calls America to try to figure out, what do I do now? So the first thought that came to my mind is bittul. Is what about the concept of bittul? Can we say maybe that it's batal? The halacha is chala is a din of truma. So chala is batal b'me, chala Eretz Yisrael in particular is more chamer than chala chutz laaretz. When a rabbi gets the shayla chutz laaretz, it's a pure drabbanan. Eretz Yisrael, it's a drabbanan that's, it's still drabbanan, but it's a drabbanan that's very close to a daraisa. It's at least patterned after a daraisa. It's something, it's a more serious chala shayla. So my first thought was bittul. So it happens to be machlokas mechaber ramah, whether you can be mosif to the dough to be mevatel it in that case. When we're dealing with challah, which is only drabbanan, and it's already b'dieved, it's in the taroves, and it's going to be all sorts of trouble. So that's a machlokas mechaber and ramah. So the ramah is machmir, the mechaber is mekel. This fellow was Ashkenazi, so bittul was not going to help us. I had forgotten that the real halach in this case, what the ramah says explicitly to do in that kind of case, just agav, might as well mention it once I'm mentioning the case, is what? Yeah, but the actual challah is mixed in. It's already mixed into the dough.
Take
so
it's
not enough to be mafresh because the whole dough is aser. The whole dough is aser, not as tevel. It's aser as challah that's mixed into the dough. So you're going to have to be mafresh another piece, but what you have to do before that is undo what you've done. So the Ramah writes that challah has a din of neder. So just like you could be shoel on a neder, you go in front of a beis din and be matzah the neder, shoel on the neder, undo the neder, so you go in front of a beis din and you could be shoel on your afrasha, and we'll make it as if you were never mafresh the challah, and then you could be mafresh again. Now the Taz disagrees with Ramah. He says that you cannot be shoel on afrasha's challah, and all the Achronim defend Ramah. They all back up the Ramah. When I asked Rav Shechter this, he said, what do you mean? Doesn't Ramah say that you're allowed? Oh, you must be thinking of the Taz. I just hadn't thought of shoel at all. I just never thought of it. He said, oh, you must be thinking of the Taz. He said, no, if I recall correctly, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva in the Zrayim Chelek of Tshuvas Har Tzvi, and he defends the Ramah very, very well. So he said, don't paskin it until you see the tshuva inside, because you have to make your own judgment whether he defends it very well. But if I remember correctly, he defends it. He defends the Ramah very well. So that was Rav Shachter's me. I mentioned it to Rav Avram Shor over Shabbos. He was saying so much beautiful Chassidish Torah. I wondered if he knew halacha that well also. His bekius was overwhelming. So I mentioned to him this shaila. He says, the Ramah and the Taz, such a shasav chak, of course you rely on the Ramah to be shoel, like immediately, without even a second of thought. So yeah, I'm the only Amaritz in the group. So the halach is that in that case to be shoel, but that's where you would have bittul. Bittul is where you have something that's aser, that machal is aser is mevatel, but you're not allowed to be mevatel, you're not allowed to create a situation of bittul. And what do you have over here? You have the tree that's above the sukkah, you have the sukkah, the tree is providing pasul schach, and that's a problem. So by lowering it down, you're being mevatla. By putting it on to the top of the sukkah, you're actually being mevatla. That's a violation of ein mevatla nisil chachila. Oh, so that's how the Taz says. The Taz says that my first kasha, my first ha'ara is the answer to the kasha.
that it's not an isser, so it's not a problem of being vatal the sukkah, especially when you usually do it. He says, certainly if you're making the sukkah before Yom, which is usually when you're making the sukkah, so then certainly it's not even schach pasul. There's no such thing as schach. It's before sukkahs. Everything is just shade. There's no mashmos to a din of schach, which is not so posh. One could argue that within 30 days of sukkah, based on the sukkah yeshana, that within 30 days the din of shol and vidarshin is such that shol and vidarshin is not just a din that you're supposed to study the laws of yantif for 30 days before yantif, but it makes the 30 days before yantif relevant to the yantif, and that all of the halachos of the yantif are now in play. So you can't just say, oh, before Sukkot, so don't worry about it, it's not schach anyway, nothing is schach before Sukkot. Within 30 days it could be that it is called schach, but the Taz points out, anyway, it's not an isser. You're allowed to build whatever kind of hut you want. You're just not allowed to eat in it and sleep in it and live in it on Sukkot. But you can build whatever kind of hut you want. The isser is to then live in such a sukkah. But that's not called being mevatel isser l'chachila. So therefore you can have bittel. So he sort of like acknowledges that this is not a normal usage of bittel as a way of answering that question of ein mevatel isser l'chachila. But the Ritva, the Ran, other Rishonim are bothered by a perhaps more fundamental question. And that is that, typically speaking, one of the rules of bittel is that you need the isser to no longer be nicker. You need it to no longer be recognizable. Let's say you have a cheeseburger and two regular hamburgers. So do you say, oh, batel barov, so I can eat whatever I want. I can eat, if you hold like those Rishonim that hold, you can eat all three, one after the other. You can eat all three, one after the other. If you hold like those Rishonim that say you can pile all three on top of each other, you can. But you see, the cheeseburger is the one with cheese in it, and the other ones are the ones without cheese in it. So then you don't say bittel. There's no, it's not batel, because it's nicker isser. You see very clearly what the isser is. When you see what the isser is, take the isser out. So you can't just say bittel. So over here also, it may be that you're lowering the schach kasha to the schach pasul, but the Rishonim say it's hard to imagine that it's not even nicker isser, that you can't even tell that the branches are attached. It still seems to be that you should be able to tell, even though it's on the same level, but it still seems to be that you should be able to tell that the branches are attached. So Rav Asher Weiss develops a mahalich in this sugya, in this understanding of bittel, in the case of sukkah, that starts off totally away from sukkah, and will ultimately bring us back. This is in his Minchas Asher on the Moadim. When I was talking to Rav Asher on Sunday morning, he was in the Five Towns area for Shabbos. So I was talking to him, and Rav Moshe Weinberger came in. So Rav Asher says, oh, Rav Moshe Weinberger, you should know Rabbi Leibowitz. Rav Moshe Weinberger is the first one that started really learning my Svarim, years and years ago, before anyone else had any of my Svarim. So Rav Moshe Weinberger said, yeah, I have all the Rebbe's Svarim. And Rav Asher says, really, all 21 of them? And Rav Moshe Weinberger says, 21? 21 Svarim. So I counted on my Svarim, I have 17 of them. I don't know which four I'm missing, but I have 17 volumes of Minchas Asher. So one of the volumes of Minchas Asher that Rav Moshe Weinberger doesn't have, we discovered through the conversation, is Minchas Asher on the Moadim. He has Shiurim on the Moadim. So he has Shiurim on the Yom Tov of Sukkot. So he has a similar Menalev about Bittel Barov B'Schach Pasul Ubi So Din Bittel Barov. Bittel Barov as it relates to Schach Pasul, but really what Bittel Barov is about in general. So it's really a Pasuk in the Torah. Pasuk says Achrei Rab Nahatos. Now what's the context of the Pasuk of Achrei Rab Nahatos? That if you have a Sanhedrin of X number of judges, so you follow the majority of the judges. Let's say it's a Beis Din of three judges, you follow the two out of the three, and that's what determines the Pesach of the Beis Din. And the same is true with Sanhedrin Katana, as well as with the Sanhedrin Agadol. They always follow the majority of opinions. Sometimes you need more than just a regular majority to be Mechayiv, someone Misa, you can need more than just a one-person majority. But basically the halacha is that you follow the majority opinion. That's Achrei Rab Nahatos. But we find two separate dinim in Chazal that they learn from Achrei Rab Nahatos that are outside of the context of Beis Din and really have nothing to do with the context of Beis Din. One is a Gemara in Chulin Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara learns from Achrei Rab Nahatos that Azlinon Basaruba. Azlinon Basaruba is very different than voting on a Beis Din and going with the majority vote. Azlinon Basaruba means that if there are 10 stores that sell meat on Central Avenue, let's say you go down Central Avenue, there are 10 stores that sell meat, and 9 of them are stores that sell kosher meat. You have Brach's and Gourmet Glad and Seasons and all the places that sell the kosher meat, and then you have one store that still somehow manages to stay open in this neighborhood, even though it's not kosher, selling the non-kosher meat, and you find meat on the sidewalk somewhere on Central Avenue, unmarked meat, sazlinan basaruba, you're allowed to follow the majority. It's not a vote, it's not that we're, it's, it has nothing to do with what's going on in the Sanhedrin, but that's based on the pasuk of Achrab Nahatos. We assume, kol de parish meruba parish, that whatever is found outside of a store, we assume has come from the majority of the stores, based on, that's the concept of Ruba di Isa Kaman, that you can count the number of stores, it's not a vote, but you count the number of stores, and you have the right to assume, kol de parish meruba parish, the meat that you found comes from the majority of the stores. There, whether we also learn following Rov by Ruba the Lessa Kaman from Achram Lahatos is Machlokes Rishonim. Ruba the Lessa Kaman means a Rov that's not in front of us to count. Meaning, the Vad sends out a list every once in a while, every 3, 4, 5 months, they'll send out an email to all the Rabbanim if there's any news to report. But along with that email, they'll always send an updated list of establishments, of stores under the Vad. So I can look at a list and I can count. This is how many kosher stores there are. That's a Ruba de Isa Kaman. They're right there in front of me. I can count the Rov. Ruba de Lessa Kaman is often referred to as a Chazaka. It just means that that's the way things normally work. Rov of the time, Rov of Benos Yisrael are ksheros. Rov Benos Yisrael are that claim to be a basula are a basula. Let's say so. We took a poll and we counted all. That. No, it's Ruba de Lessa Kaman. It's a chazaka that's the way it is. So whether that's learned from Akram Nahatos is really totally in 2 days in Rashi and Chulin Daf Yud Beis. But at the very least, the Ruba de Isa Kaman that called the Parish Ruba Parish we learn from Akram Nahatos. That's one concept of Rov that we learn from Akram Nahatos that has nothing to do with Sanhedrin. Another concept of Rov is the concept of Bittel Barov. Now, the funny thing about Bittel Barov is that all Rishonim assume the concept of Bittel Barov comes from Acharam Lahatos, but it does not appear in the Gemara at all. The Gemara assumes Bittel Barov all over Shas. The Gemara never tells us where it comes from. It never tells us what the Pasuk is. So Rav Asher, using his Bekiyas, collects a pretty impressive collection of Rishonim that say explicitly that it's based on Acharam Lahatos. Rashi Beitz Adav Gimelam Beis Rashi and Gittin and Dalan Beis Rashi and Bamatzion and Gimelam Ralph and Chulin Sadichasim Beis Vachbayim Beis Amaralph Nidam Amzayim Ralph Tosin Avod Dazar Sabaches Rashim Chulin Parag Zayin Ramban Chulin Sadichasim Beis Bechuli Bechuli. And there are more. So all these Rishonim, without any debate, everyone just automatically assumes, of course, Bittel Barov, the concept that you could be Mevatel something, that when something gets mixed in with something else, when an Isser gets mixed in with a lot of Heter, the heter is mevatel the iser. Let's say the three hamburgers, and let's say one of them is just not kosher, it's not a cheeseburger. You can't identify which hamburger is not kosher, which two are kosher. That it's batel barov. That's a din that we learn from Acharam Lahatos. There are no judges voting, and it's not based on the number of stores or Ruba de Isa Kaman or anything like that. It's bittel. It's a din of a bittel and a tarovas. Now the question is, how do we learn that from Acharam Lahatos? Bittel barov makes it that the Isser turns into a heter. Imamish turns the Isser into a davra mutter. What does that have to do with deciding a case based on a majority vote in the Sanhedrin? That doesn't turn the judges who vote against them into non-entities. They're still people. It's just we have to make a decision. So we follow based on the majority. And yet all the Rishonim assume that Bittel Barov, of course, it's learned from Acharam Lahatos. The Aruch HaShulchan, in particular, in Siman Sadiches, is troubled by this. And he says, you know, I have a better place to learn Bittel Barov from. Pasuk says, V'lakach midama paru midama sayer, that you take from the dama paru and the dama sayer together. And as Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda Lecham in Maseches Menachos Daf Chav Beis, why isn't the Dam HaSa'ir automatically batel in the Dam HaPar? If you shecht a bull, you will have a lot of blood. You shecht a goat, you will have a fair amount of blood, but nowhere near the amount of blood that you would shecht, that you would have when you shecht a bull. So if you're going to mix the blood of the par with the blood of the sayer, you should no longer have Dam HaSa'ir. It should become entirely batel in the Dam HaPar. So is it because min b'mina lo batel? Do we assume that the Dam HaSa'ir is still an entity because these are two like kinds, that's Dam and Dam? Or is it because Kachim is not Mevatel Zezah? But the Gemara over there says that according to the Chachamim, if it's Mishum Min B'mina Lo Batel, it should have told us by Yisurim Acherim and not by Kachim. Why is it only by Kachim? But you see that it's a special din only by Kachim. But it sounds like, by according to the Chachamim at least, by other dinim outside of Kachim, Min B'mina would be Batel. So you see right there, from that halacha, that there is a din of Bittel Barov. That from the fact that Dam HaPar v'Dam HaSa'ir is the exception, So it's the exception that proves the rule. This is the exception where we say the Damasar is still an entity, even though it's mixed in with the majority. That should be the exception that proves the rule. So the Aruch HaShulchan is bothered by this. Why does everyone just assume it based on Sanhedrin, Akrev and Lahatos, got nothing to do with Sanhedrin? Okay, but it's a Kashi, he's bothered by it, but all the Rishonim assume that Bitl Barov comes from Sanhedrin. Now, is there any halachic significance to that, that we learn Bitl Barov from the laws of Sanhedrin? So Rav Asher collects five places where we find poskim think that where it's derived from somehow educates us about how Bitl Barov works. For example, the Levush in Siman Tafresh Lamed Beis Sif Aleph, it's quoted by the Taz and Sifkat and Gimel in Tafresh Lamed Beis. I think I have it here with the initial Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, if you look in source number 7, the Halacha and Shulchan Aruch is back to the Schach case. Schach pasul posel be'emtza bedal tfachim, avul pachas medal ksheva. If you have schach pasul in the middle of your sukkah, four tfachim or more, it's going to be pasul. Less than four tfachim, it's kasher. Umutu lishon tachtav minat sad, umutu lishon tachtav, and if it's less than four tfachim, you're even allowed to sleep under it. Minat sad, eino posel al bedal ramos. You have schach pasul off to the side of the sukkah, only four amos or more is pasul, avul pachas medal ramos ksheva, darmin dofin akuma. Less than four amos from the side of the sukkah of schach pasul is going to be kasher. That's the concept of dofen akuma, and he describes what dofen akuma is. Says it's halach al Moshe Mitzrayim. Skipping ahead a line, hilchas bayish and nifchas beemtzav sichek b'makom apchas v'nishem and atikra sav beit schach kasher lekosal and pachs me'arba amos ksheira. The classic example of dofen akuma: the middle of the roof caves in, and you put schach kasher where you now have your brand new skylight. Because the roof caved in, as long as there's less than four amos on the sides of that schach, between the schach and the wall, less than four amos of ceiling left, so then it's going to be kosher. Umiyu ein yishenim tachtav. But you're not allowed to sleep underneath that area, kol zman sheyesh bar ba tfachim, because it is four tfachim or more. Ba'med dvar mamurim besukah gedola sheyesh bar yosral haschach pasul zayin tfachim al zayin tfachim. That's only by a sukah gedola, where you have at least Zayin Tfachim, more than Zayin Tfachim al Zayin Tfachim. Aval besukah katana, she'in ba ela Zayin al Zayin. But if you have a sukkah katana, that the whole thing is only 7 by 7 Tfachim, bein ba'emtza, bein minatzad, begimel Tfachim psula. Wherever the schach pasul is, 3 Tfachim of schach pasul in a sukkah katana would pasul the whole thing. V'pachos migimel, less than 3 Tfachim, ksheira, the Yeshenim Tachtav is kosher, and you're even allowed to sleep underneath it. Umitztarif lahashlim asukkah l'shir, and that's going to go toward making the sukkah a kosher sukkah. So if you have the bare minimum size sukkah, like those pop-up sukkahs, which are not much bigger than 7 by 7 tefachim, bare minimum size sukkah, and the of the schach, 2.9 tefachim of your schach is schach pasul, it's kosher, and it's as if you have a fully kosher functional sukkah. It's even yeshenim taktav, you're allowed to be underneath that schach. So says the Taz in source number 8, dekivan shu davar muat, have a command alay, say dami. Since it's such a small thing, it's as if it's not there. V'kosubul v'shbazeh, shebatalu eitzel haschach kosher, ha-kosher, kedin kol iser hamisbatal beheter, shenase ha-iser heter. This is Bitl Barov. What happens when you have Bitl Barov? The whole thing becomes mutter. So if you have 2.9 tefachim of schach pasul together with your schach kasher, it's Bitl Barov, and all of the schach pasul turns into schach kasher. Aval kasheli, halo amrinu kein ele b'shein makirin oso, v'kan makirin oso, v'tzarachiyun. He says, but that's a little difficult over here, because over here we are makirin oso. Over here it's nicker, we can recognize the schach pasul. So how can we say that it's going to be batel? And then he goes on to discuss. The Levush writes that even something that's nicker apparently is batel barov. Why? The Levush's raya is from the Sanhedrin. The Levush's raya is by the Sanhedrin. How do you decide what the decision of the Sanhedrin is? You have 23 judges. Should we kill this guy? Should we not kill this guy? 13 judges vote to kill him. 10 judges vote not to kill him. What do? We kill him, right? But wait a second, the 10 judges voted not to kill him. Do we pretend that we don't recognize them anymore, that they're not there, that they don't exist? No, they do exist, and they're nicker, they're very clearly recognizable, and we kill them. So we're still going to kill the guy, even though these judges voted against him, and it's nicker to Isser. So you see from the fact that by a Sanhedrin, we're going to say, Acharav Lahatos, even when the minority is nicker. So too, by Bittul Barov, we're going to still say Bittul Barov even when the minority is nicker. I asked the Levush, but we know that that's not true. Whenever the miyut is nicker, we never say Bittul Barov. Say, that's the Rabbanon. But on a Doraisa level, you got to say Bittul Barov even when the miyut is nicker, because the whole thing is learned from Sanhedrin. So you see what the Levush does is he uses Sanhedrin as the model to determine how Bittul Barov is going to work, even though Sanhedrin has nothing to do with Bittul Barov. But since that's the pasuk that teaches us Bittul Barov, so mainly we use that as the model, and if by Sanhedrin you're going to have the miut be nicker, and we're still going to say you follow the rov, so by Bittul Barov also, even when the miut is nicker, you're still going to say Bittul Barov. That's one example of where we find that where it's derived from makes a difference. Another example is the expression that Chazal used. I gave the hamburger case before, and the way it's given by all Rishonim and the way the Chazal give it, the way the Gemara Chulin actually gives it, is exactly that you have two kosher ones and one non-kosher one. Chad betray batel is the expression that Chazal used. One is batel and two. So you have two kosher ones, one non-kosher one. Now, that's not just a rov when you have chad betray. That's a super rov. You have twice as much kosher as you have non-kosher. Well, that's the easiest rove to work with, because if you have one non-kosher thing, the easiest way to get to a rove is to say that you have two kosher. It's much easier than saying you have 51 kosher hamburgers and 49 non-kosher hamburgers. So there is a machlokas in the poskim. What if it's 51 to 49? What if it's 3 to 2? What if it's not twice as much kosher as possible? Is chad betray dafka? Does it need to be 66.6%? Kosher to the 33.3% not kosher? Or does it just need to be a rov? It just needs to be more than 50%. So this is machlokas in the poskim. The Ramah in Torah Schatas, Klal Lamates, holds that you need double. It's chad betray is dafka. You actually need double of the heter to the iser. Prichadosh writes that a rov koldu is enough. You just need a little bit of a majority. Pesachei Tshuva quotes all the different opinions. So what's the svara to be makel that all you need is a majority? So all those who are makel, the Prichadosh and others, their major svara is, where do I learn that you follow rov? I learn it from Sanhedrin, Acher Rav Nahatos. Granted, it's not a din of bittul by the Sanhedrin, but we learn it from Sanhedrin. And how much of a rov do you need by Sanhedrin? A 12 to 11 vote to acquit a person that gets him acquitted. So that all you need is a tiny majority. You just need a rov koldehu. So again, we see that even though the Pasuk of Acher Rav Nahatos in its original context is not about Bittul at all. It's just about voting based on a rov. It's not really about Bittul at all. We use the fact that the source is from Sanhedrin to educate us on the rules of Bittul Barov. Both in terms of what we said before, Nikar HaIsser, that the Levush thinks that even when it's Nikar HaIsser could be Batel, just like by the Sanhedrin, and in terms of how much of a rov we actually require. There are a few other examples. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'll mention one other one. The Chalkas Yoav. Chalkas Yoav was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer. He has a very similar style to the Avnei Nezer. He's the one that wrote that sefer that I love, the Kavod de Kashyasa, which is printed in the back of his Tshuvas Chalkas Yoav. So it's a very different style. The Avnei Nezer had a few very big Talmudim that all tried to imitate his style. The Avnei Nezer was extremely sharp, and always with a chap, every tshuva, there's no such thing as, like, you know, sometimes you read Rav Avadia Yosef's tshuvas, for example, and it's like you know exactly where he's going. He starts with the pasuk, then the Gemara, the basic Rishonim, this is what, you know, these, and then at the end he'll just throw in, like, the Chain Kasav, a million other achronim. But, like, the tshuva, like, usually it goes in a very clear direction, you know exactly where he's going with it. The Avnei Nezer is almost like the exact opposite. You have no idea what sort of turn he's going to take at any point, where he's going to have a chap, where he's going to have a... It's an entirely different style of learning. So all of his Talmidim pretty much followed that same style of learning. The Rav Shor quoted over Shabbos, the Eretz Tzvi, the Kajaglover. The Kajaglover also had, he was also Rav Arya Tzvi Frumer. That was Rosh Shiva of Chachmei Lublin after Rav Meir Shapiro passed away. Rav Meir Shapiro died suddenly at a fairly young age in the early 1930s. He had already built up Chachmei Lublin to one of the most prestigious yeshivas in all of Europe, so they needed a replacement. The Rav Arya Tzvi Frumer was the replacement. He's a little less, his innovation was a little less known than Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro came up with Daf Yomi, Rav Arya Tzvi Frumer came up with Mishnah Yomis. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not bad. Mishnah Yomis would have been a good, if you weren't trying to follow up Daf Yomi, you know, it would have been a pretty good claim to fame. But so all of these Talmidim, they all have the same style where they try to bring in Gemaras that you would never think have anything to do with anything, and with a twist, with a chap, with a... So the Chalkas Yov suggests as follows. The way Rav Asher introduces the Chalkas Yov is he says, Hiflik vazema od vihidyish asasa'a. He overdoes it. When he does this comparison between Acharav Nahatos by Sanhedrin and the din of Bittul Barov, why? Because he says that the din that he's mechadesh that there's no that Isser is not Bittul Barov Heter unless the Isser and the Heter are in the same city. Why do they have to be in the same city? Not if they're separated in two different cities. Why? Because the whole din is learned from Sanhedrin, and the Vishorish Hadin Hu B'mashem Miut HaDayanim Mitzuvim Levatal Daitam Al Arov. What's the din by? Why do we follow the majority vote by Sanhedrin? Because that's the halacha. When you agree to sit on a Sanhedrin, you follow the rules of a Sanhedrin. And the rule is that if you are outvoted, you take a seat and you let the vote go the other way, because that's the way the vote, that's the way it works. Sometimes you have to swallow your pride and you get outvoted. But that whole din that the miut, the opinions of the miut, they need to be mevatel their das to the majority, is all because of lo siskodidu. It's because there's a halacha of lo siskodidu, that two groups should not develop within a single community. They should have uniform standards within a single community. So you don't want some people have a minhag one way and some people have a minhag another way. This is something that's a concept that's been lost a little bit in America, because so many people came from so many different communities in Europe, and we all sort of moved together to the same, you know, New York area, let's say. So, like, there are people within the same shul that put on tefillin and chol hamoed and don't put on tefillin and chol hamoed and do also all sorts of different minhagim. But in the old communal structure, the way it was supposed to be is a community has its standards and you don't develop different practices. Los Escodi, you're not supposed to become agudos agudos. So where is there a din of Los Escodi? So the Gemara in Yevam Estaf Yedalot says that bi'ir achas, we're not allowed to make the Torah kishtei Torahs. But if you have a Marad Asra in one city and then a Marad Asra in the other city, so they can have totally different minhagim in two different cities. There's a whole parak of Maseches Pesachim about that, where a person is holy from Makom Shenagu to not do Malach on Erev Pesach, to Makom Shenagu to do Malach on Erev Pesach. That's fine. They can have different places where some have a minhag, the Mishnah Maseches says, some have a minhag to light candles on the night of Yom Kippur, some have a minhag not to light candles in Yom Kippur. They all had the same kavanah. You can have different minhagim in different cities, but not in the same city. So the whole din that the miut of the Sanhedrin has to be mevatel their das to the majority of the Sanhedrin is all based on los hiskodidu. That's why we go with the majority vote. They have to be mevatel their das to the majority, but that's only in the same city. So if you were to somehow have a bittul barov situation that spans cities, I'm not sure exactly how you would have that exactly, how you would have a tarovis that spans cities. Maybe you sent out shipments to different places. Let's say you have a business that sends out food to different supermarkets in all sorts of different cities, and you realize afterwards, Ive, there was one box of treif meat that I sent out. So it's all one big tarovis because you have no idea where it is now, but they're all in different cities. So maybe you wouldn't say bittul barov in different cities either, because it's all based on Acharav Nahatos. Now, why does Rav Asher not like that? Because he says Dvarim Eilu Tumum Ad L'Ma'od. That's quite an extension of Acharav Nahatos. Meaning that idea of from one city to another city really only makes sense in the context of the Sanhedrin when we're talking about establishing communal practice. When we're talking about being mevata, a little bit of treif of chicken that falls into your kosher chicken soup, or a little bit of, you know, what does it have to do with cities? Why would cities make any, even an ounce of difference when it comes to that? So it's just so illogical to apply it to that extent. But that's the style, meaning that's a very good example of the style of the Talmidim of the Avni Nezer. Rav Shefti used to say, I would never be able to say this, but he used to say that's the difference between the Rebbe and the Talmidim. That the Avni Nezer, the Chidushim were wild, and they were off the charts, unbelievable, but they seemed correct at the end. They often seemed to be correct. A lot of times the Talmidim would have the same wild streak and Bekiyas and the Harifas, and they would put it all together. But at the end, it just doesn't seem it doesn't seem like it's really correct by halacha. So this is a very good example of that. So this all we've done so far is we've said that the pasuk of Acharav Nahatos teaches us not only to follow a majority of a Sanhedrin, but it also teaches us a din of kol deparish menubeparish, that you follow rov, and it teaches us a din of bittul barov. The fact that it teaches us the din of bittul barov seems to be agreed upon by all Rishonim, and even educates us on how to apply bittul barov. Whether it's the Lavush saying that we apply bittul barov even when it's nikara iser, or whether it's the Pri Chadash saying that we apply Bittul Barov even when it's not a 2-to-1 ratio, or even if you go as far as the Chalkas Yoav and say that you're not going to apply Bittul Barov across two cities. It's all because it's supposed to mimic Achrei Rav Nahatos. It's somehow supposed to copy Achrei Rav Nahatos. But he quotes from Rav Shimon Shkap in Shari Yosher, in Shar Gimel Perek Dalet. Shari Yosher is a very challenging sefer to read. If you're not used to the language, it's very different. Nowadays, almost every Rabbi Balzman was just mentioning to me after Rabbi Shur's shir on Shabbos morning, he said, you know, it was the first time in his life that he remembers hearing a shir that actually wasn't Brisker Torah. Meaning, no matter where you come from, it's some version of Brisker Torah that's being learned in yeshivas. That it was just a very different style. It's an entirely different. It was refreshing a little bit to hear something that was a little bit of a different style. It was lumdus, but it wasn't brisker at all. It was just like opening up possibilities and never closing them, and then jumping from this place to that place to that place. It was just a very different style. Rav Shimon is a very different style. If you're not used to that style of limud, it's very challenging. I always have. I'm not speaking the same language as Rav Shimon usually. I don't understand anything he says. Rav Shechta blames his father-in-law. He says that Rav Shechta said that his father-in-law wrote the Shari Yosher. He was a Talmud of Rav Shimon, and Rav Shechta's father-in-law was a Rebbe in Parvadas for many years. But before that, as a Bacher, he was very close to Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon had him come live with him for a couple of years as he was writing the Shari Yosher, because apparently Rav Shimon was a genius, but he was not a good writer. And Rav Shechta's father-in-law had a reputation for being a good writer. So he says, my father-in-law did such a good job. He wrote in such flowery language that no one can understand what he's talking about. It's so flowery. But Rav Shimon has one piece that I think Rav Soloveitchik said the same thing. I think it's pretty widely accepted. That when we say Achrei Rav Nahatos by Sanhedrin, there are really two dinim in following the majority by the Sanhedrin. And this is going to change everything. One din that we follow the majority is that when we have to decide how the psak is going to turn out, so we follow the majority of the opinion. So if it's a 13-10 vote, we follow the 13, not the 10. Okay, that's the standard Achrei Rav Nahatos that you would imagine by Sanhedrin. We have to come to some psak, so the psak that we're going to come to is whatever the majority says. But then there's another din that's going on over there. See, when a Sanhedrin issues a psak, you can't have X number of the judges from a Sanhedrin issuing the psak. It has to be the psak of the Sanhedrin, as a unit, as an entity. The entire Sanhedrin, it has to be the psak of the Sanhedrin kula, of the entire Sanhedrin as a single unit. In that sense, we sort of do apply Bittul Barov by Sanhedrin. Meaning, just like when you have a little piece of treif of chicken that comes and falls into a big pot of chalent, and we say that it's Bittul Barov, that it's Bittul B'shisha, or whatever, it's Bittul, and all becomes one big unit of kasher, so too by the judges in the Sanhedrin. It's not that it's 13 judges voting that the guy should be chayiv, and that's why he's chayiv. No, it's that it's the Sanhedrin of Chaf Gimel, it's the Sanhedrin of 23 judges voting that he's chayiv, and that's why he's chayiv. Aye, but 10 of them voted to acquit, 10 of them voted that he's not chayiv. It doesn't matter. Once we have the rov, those 10 are batel barov, and the entire unit is viewed as one unit of a Sanhedrin that votes to be mechayiv. So that's the word of Rav Shimon. So in a way, it's not so far off to say Achrei Rav Nahatos to apply Bittul Barov. The Onigantiv even has a shayla, and this may relate to this issue also. Whether when we say miyit batel is batel barov, do we say that even let's say you have matzah she'ino shmura, a rov matzah shmura and a little bit of matzah she'ino shmura. So do you say that now all of it has a din of matzah shmura? That you would say batel barov even when there's no iser per se. It's just a matter of lishma, shmira lishma. So we just say, so that also may be part of the sort of the suffix is, if does bittul help to only be mesalik Hashem iser, or does bittul help to change the identity entirely to the majority? So he says it could be that it's totally on the yisod of the psak din of Sanhedrin. If the miut is batel, it's as if it's kamisha eno, and the psak din is called al shem only the rov. So it could be bittul barov. It could be by bittul barov the miut is as if it doesn't exist, but it's not mekabel the shem of the rov. But if the way the psak din of a Sanhedrin works is that the miut becomes part of the rov, it all becomes like the one big Sanhedrin, that they're all voting l'chayev, they're all voting in one direction. Now it's all this big Sanhedrin, it's all voting in one direction. So then Bittul Barov turns the miut into whatever the rov is. So mele the miut becomes the miut would become shmura matzah as well. Then Rav Asher says, just to bring it all home back to our sukkah case,
He says, Yisod HaDvarim, he thinks, is as follows. Kasher Danim Anu Al Davar Mesuyam, Shiesh Bo Rov Miut. When we are judging a particular item that has a majority and a minority, and we have to determine between the Rov and the Miut, and we can't look at each one independently because they're all mixed together as one unit, so then the halacha is that the Rov overpowers. But when there's nothing forcing us to connect the Rov to the Miut, and you could judge each one separately, each one should be viewed separately. See, a Sanhedrin is a davar mesuyam. A Sanhedrin has to be made up of Chav Gimel. Yeah, there will be 13 judges this way, 10 judges the other way, but it has to be a decision of the Sanhedrin. Why is it that Nikar Isser is not Batal? Because Mehechi Tesi, if it's Nikar Isser, that you have to view it as one unit. Don't view it as one unit. Say that the Isser that is Nikar is separate, and Mele, you don't have to say Bittel Grove. You don't have to turn anything into this. He says that answers the case by Sukkah. Even though by the Sukkah it's Nikar Isser, yeah, you see the branches on top of the Sukkah. What makes me judge it as one unit, though? It's all part of the structure of my Sukkah. So even normally Nikar Isser means that it's not one unit, but over here it's all part of the unit of the Sukkah. So Mele, if it's all part of one of the unit of the Sukkah, you're going to have to go back to the rules of Bittel Rov, and that goes back to explain our Rashi that we began with.